goes on? You've been crawling on my belly, clearing out what could have been. Been wallowing in my own chaotic, insecure delusions.
John's L.A. Martin Luther King Day, special edition. Super Bowl is set. Might as well get into the pro game right away. Not a ton to talk about in the college game. Happy Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King fun fact. He's like 13 years old. His grandmother died. He tried to jump out a window and kill himself. True story. It's all right. You know, hey, I'm not hating on Martin Luther. Hey, equal opportunity hater here. I don't think MLK would have survived the internet age. I think, you know, he's a philanderer. All right, I don't want to bash the guy. Thank you, Martin, for giving us the day off. Allow people like me to go back and watch the Patriots-Denver game again. That's what happens when you don't have kids. You can get up on a day off and watch the same game again, fast forward, and instead of sitting around the house and watching Ice Age 2 for the 10th time or whatever it may be on DVD, get to watch the games again. Get to relive the Patriots-Broncos. Oh, boy. I tell you, I sat down and I wrote down, you know, it obviously gets played out as Manning over Brady because we like to simplify things, but it just, once again, so what I've been saying all year, this failed to give Tom Brady the appropriate weapons to actually make a play. Just looking at the first few drives, people tend to remember the end of the game drives, but every possession counts, especially in a game like the Patriots Broncos the other day. It was only eight. Patriots only got eight possessions. First two possessions, key, three and out. First play of the game, 4 yard out to Edelman. Tried to run the ball, nothing. They tried to run a quick slant to Austin Collie. First of all, Austin Collie was targeted, what, by my count, at least seven times. They freaking cut the guy four times during the year. How do you expect to go to the Super Bowl and win it when Brady's second best target or second most used target is a guy that they've cut four times during the season? It's absolutely amazing. Talk about a genetic mismatch. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie versus Austin Collie. Cromartie's huge. Just swallowed him up. Knocked the pass away. First drive. Second drive, start out with the play action pass to Matthew Mulligan. Oh, Matthew Mulligan, the guy who caught two passes all year long, is Tom Brady's weapon. Second series. Try to run the ball again on second and down because they never try to run it on first down. And then the third play in the second series is another one that freaking drove me nuts. Try to throw a fade route to Matthew Slater, who they don't even talk about this in the replay of the game in the broadcast. Completely mistimes his jump. Is coming down. Is almost hitting the ground when the ball actually comes down. The guy's caught. Another guy has caught maybe what, two passes all year. Special team player. And this is where they're throwing to on third down. Matthew Slater. Unreal. And then the third possession of the game, Patriots come out, put together a little drive, and then they get hit on the pass interference from Who Man Nua Nawalala, whatever his name is, little rub route, runs into a guy, gets called for it. So instead of Patriots having the ball fourth and one in field goal range, pushes him back out of field goal range, they end up punting the ball away. And then try to do a little wide receiver screen, punt the ball away. Ironically enough, Broncos come right back next series. The same freaking thing with Welker. Just takes out Tlaib. We've all seen it 100 times. Belichick got on his press conference today saying he was one of the worst plays he's ever seen. I don't know what he means by that. You know, how about the irony in that? Wes Welker goes out and takes arguably the Patriots' best defensive player on the play that the Patriots just got called on before. Unreal. These rub routes got to go. Too much. These freaking pick routes, it's just too much. It's amazing. They let them get away with it. At times, it's such a subjective thing, but they can watch that. They can have one person watch that call. Patriots got called on it. Broncos didn't. And that's it. Patriots get the ball again. Fourth possession. And the Patriots' third down offense and defense has been awful all year. Third down. First of all, when you got a guy like Brady, the D-line, I'm saying all the time, they got the two-way goes because Brady can't get out and run. So you get a two-way go. Robert Ayers comes in, beats what's-his-name, Solder clean inside. And then you got these white boy wide receivers trying to run wiggle routes and slants. Nobody even looking at the ball. Brady gets sacked. That game was won and lost up front, as all games are. But it'll, in the narrative, in the ESPN narrative, it'll be Manning trumps Brady. Now the script is going to flip, and everybody's going to talk about how Brady isn't, you know, because his numbers haven't been that good in the playoffs relatively in the last few years, even though he's the first quarterback in the history of the NFL to throw for over 6,000 yards in the playoffs. And they would give him shit. He missed Colley on that play action. Who knows, though? A more gifted receiver, guy who hasn't been cut four times in the same year, might run under that ball. Same thing, you know, it was Edelman on one and Colley on another. Then they get the ball back. Sixth drive. Denver starts their second half on an 8-minute drive. Essentially ices the game, but, you know, Brady fights back, comes back and put together a 14-play drive. Second and two. Vereen, the ball gets tipped, but Vereen drops it. Ridley for no gain. Then Logan Mankins, probably a Hall of Fame lineman, great offensive lineman for Patriots, gets beat clean. Brady sacked again. Same thing. The receiving crew for the Patriots, nobody looking for the ball. Everybody just trying to get open, getting swallowed up by better athletes on the other side. Right on top of Brady, can't make a play. Get the ball back again, score a couple more times. Then this one really rubbed me raw. This one really drew me off sides. The genius of Bill Belichick, as everyone likes to talk about. They're going for a 2-point conversion to make it a one-score game, or one-possession game, rather. They try to run an inside zone where they're outnumbered. They run into a dead tight end side, meaning there was tight end with no receiver outside. They were outnumbered on that side. I handed it off to Vereen. Vereen gets swallowed up by an unblocked DN. The genius of Bill Belichick. There's only one genius, and his name was Lanny Poffo. Oh, I digress. Just terrible. Just awful to watch. He's a Patriot fan. You know, been the same thing over and over again. No pass rush defensively. No playmakers in the back end when Tlaib got knocked out of the game. Second AFC championship in a row, Tlaib gets knocked out of the game. I don't know what they're going to end up doing with him. But the genius, the DB genius, the defensive genius, again, puts out a team that can't rush the passer, a team that has mediocre, what am I, Richard Sherman? And Richard Sherman seemed like he just learned that word. That's the one word they teach at Stanford, mediocre. I must have heard that 50 times this morning and last night. Pseudo-intellectual. Richard Sherman, we'll get to him. Putting up, again, let me finish out the season on Belichick. Putting out a lackluster defensive backfield, an average pass rush at best, and the genius, the defensive genius that hasn't had a good defense in 5 years since the retirement of Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harrison. I digress. It's going to be another long offseason. See what the Patriots can do. Oh, well. Now we got another week of Peyton. Let's talk about the other game. How about San Fran? Seattle, all the San Fran fans out there got to be... Get their rhubarb Ron on this one. Shit. San Fran had that game. I thought they had the game. They pissed it away at the end. And, of course, all they want to talk about today, all they want to talk about is Richard Sherman. You know, people want to get on the internet and people want to get on Twitter and talk about Richard Sherman being a thug. I don't know. What are you going to do with Richard Sherman? I think we need villains, though. I've talked about this before. It's good to have a villain. It's good. He's like a bad guy wrestler. You need that. You know, this is supposed to be a surprise that Richard Sherman's going to talk like this. And you know what? He had personal beef with Crabtree. So I could see that. But to talk about bad coaching again, which gets lost in this whole translation of Richard Sherman. Why the hell, with 25 seconds left in the game on a 1st-and-10, are you going to try to beat a 6-3 corner on a fade route that's underthrown in the back of the end zone? I guess he's trying to get a back shoulder fade, but you got a guy with a huge wingspan. Just gets his arm back. Tips it up, and that's it. Sick of Seattle and the 12th man, though. You know, what Richard Sherman has effectively done is he's effectively forced millions of middle-aged, middle America, white dads, white soccer dads, play football and pull against Richard Sherman. You know, the little guy sitting around, if my coach ever saw me do that, I would have been benched so fast. Pete Carroll. Then he goes, you know, discipline. No, it's really much about athletes. You know, Pete Carroll just lets them do what they want, unless they make plays. But, you know, the whole shit gets blown out of proportion. A guy like Sherman's not doing anything off the field. What the hell? He's a volatile guy. It's a volatile sport. You're going to stick Aaron Andrews' microphone right in front of his face right at the end of the game. Of course he's going to be fired up. Especially, he said Crabtree evidently disrespected him in the offseason. They had a personal beef, had to be separated. So he goes, the guy who's going to fire it up. Stick Aaron Andrews out there, which was hilarious, by the way. Aaron Andrews sound like a sorority sister after she's like, who was even talking about you? Sherman just going nuts. Oh, she's the worst, too. But, you know, they have it. Kaepernick just didn't play well down the stretch. Although he was a freak athlete. It's going to be interesting what San Fran does going forward, though, because they're going to have to pay Kaepernick. That's why these two teams may be, I don't want to say flash in the pans, because I think Harbaugh and Carroll can do a decent job, but it's amazing with these quarterbacks on rookie contracts, how much that affects the rest of the team and the way the rosters are built throughout the team. And even a guy like Sherman, you know, it's amazing how little they get paid. Like, NFL players get robbed in a lot of ways. So reading a thing today, a suite at the Super Bowl at the Meadowlands cost $900,000 for the Super Bowl. $900,000 to get a suite for the Super Bowl. And then you look at Russell Wilson is going to make $681,000 this season. Richard Sherman's going to make $600,000 this season. But it costs $900,000 to get a freaking press box at the game. Something's skewed. The whole thing's friggin' rotten. But there you go. There you have it. Denver, Seattle. I'll talk more. I'll do more of a preview of it next week after we have a full week of talking about Peyton and Richard Sherman. And we'll have enough of that. I'm sure there'll be plenty of material to go around. Peyton becomes one of seven quarterbacks to change teams and actually can go to a Super Bowl, trying to become the eighth quarterback of all time to change teams and win a Super Bowl. Breeze, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, Favre, Steve Young, Doug Williams, Jimmy Plunkett. And John Fox becomes, one of six head coaches to go ahead and go to a second Super Bowl, take a second team. It's Don Shula, Dick Vermeil, Dan Reeves, Bill Parcells, Mike Holmgren, and John Fox. Those, you know, you got to give respect to those guys. It's why they always bow down, and even Peyton came out this week and bowed down to Belichick, calling him the greatest coach of all time. But you got to give it to the guys who take multiple teams, or a guy like Joe Gibbs who takes multiple quarterbacks. You know, it's one, you got a quarterback who's willing to take a pay cut that Brady has, you know, and consistently put up, I don't want to say terrible, but average showings in the big stage, in the Super Bowls, and in the AFC Championships, the only bright spots in all those games has been Brady. Oh, I digress. Seems like Peyton's a step ahead of everybody. And the Patriots are a step behind. Moving on, let's go on. Let's backtrack to the college game. See what we got. Love this, Charlie Strong, new coach of Texas. Of course, in Texas, the t-shirt was being put out, black is the new brown. And picture of Charlie Strong. Charlie Strong comes up with all this, you know, come down and lay the hammer down. Interesting set of rules Charlie put out there in the beginning. Number one, attend classes. They have to sit in the, all players have to sit in the first two rows of a class, and GAs and position coaches are going to come and watch them. No headphones or texting allowed in class. If you miss a class, you will run to a, I like this one. If you miss a class, you will run till it hurts. If you miss a second class, the entire position unit runs. So say you're a linebacker, all the linebackers run. And if you miss a third, your position coach runs. Oh, man. It's a good one. No earrings in building. No off-campus housing. And if they have a lease right now, the university or the football team will buy back all of the leases, and they're forcing all the kids to go into the dorms. See how Charlie Strong does. Of course, it is Texas with all the, you know, number one football state in the country at the high school level. I think he's going to be successful with it. We'll see. I think Mac Brown just missed on a couple quarterbacks. Talked about it before. What are you going to do? Making them all live in the dorms, though. And of course, no drugs, no guns, and treating women with respect. Well, good for him. Moving on in the college game. I don't know if you've been following the it's been a while, the O'Bannon, Ed O'Bannon, basketball player of UCLA versus the NCAA. He's trying to pay so that they can get some residuals, so players can get residuals from being their likeness being shown on video games and the like, and their jerseys and stuff like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But what the NCAA argued was great. The NCAA said, college athletes can't be paid because games are protected under the First Amendment as a news program, and that college athletic games are not commercial broadcasts. Rather, they are news programs. Unbelievable. In an average college game, there are over 120 separate commercials. Okay, I read this thing. It was an hour of a broadcast time is commercials, yet the NCAA is going to argue, and argue successfully to an extent, that there are news programs. Amazing. I'm tired of this university system, especially at the college ranks. They're forcing these football players, Maurice Claretts, your clownies, they're forcing them to go to college, even though they have no desire to be in college. They only want to play sports. And they're forcing these guys to go to college. And then they're claiming that they're, you know, no, these are news programs. These are collegiate news programs. Amazing. Then you see articles like University of North Carolina where they had advisors, they had classroom advisors or educational advisors that would steer the kids into classes they didn't even have to go to. And that's North Carolina, supposedly a, you know, place of higher learning, a college that's supposed to have really high test scores. It's all shit. You get a guy like Richard Sherman who goes to Stanford. I'm sure Richard, you know, he can use the word mediocre all he wants. I'm not fooled. So we got good SAT scores. Big freaking deal. And they were talking about Division I football coaches and how out of total revenue for all Division I athletics, or well, football revenue, the football coaches get 3.5% of all total revenue. If you compare that to the NFL coaches only get 1.5% of all total revenue goes in their pockets. So you bring the college ranks back down to the pro ranks, there'd be plenty of money left over to pay players or at least give them a little bit of a stipend to do stuff. And I don't feel like getting into all that, but they need to be paid a little bit because people are fleecing them. These universities, these scam artists. When's the last time you saw a college go out of business? Here's a hint, they don't, because then they just let more people in. They're just big marketing schemes. That's all they are. They're frigging Ponzi scheme. These degrees, while they don't mean anything, they do mean something. I mean, good luck trying to do things without it. You do need that degree, but it's a freaking scam. Especially in this day and age where any knowledge that you want is just sitting in your freaking living room on a laptop. I digress. That has nothing to do with football. Let's get back into football. What else we got? Vanderbilt went out and hired Derek Mason to replace James Franklin, the Stanford D coordinator. I think it's a good hire. A guy who is familiar with higher level academics. Although evidently a funny story with that, Vanderbilt went out and sent an airplane to pick up Pep Hamilton, who's the offensive coordinator with the Colts right now, and he refused. How much money does it cost to send out a private airplane for a guy who doesn't even want to work at your school? You know, and how much does it cost to live in the dorms of Vanderbilt? I digress. We went out and got a good one, though. Speaking of which, at Penn State, James Franklin just took on two of my good friends. Sean Spencer, defensive line coach now at Penn State. Ricky Ronnie now the quarterback coach at Penn State as well. Good for them. That program will be fine. You can't hold down a program like that. What else we got? Let's go back into the pro game. All types of things to talk about in that. Lauren Tannehill, wife of Ryan Tannehill, rented a car this week and then left her AK-47 behind in the trunk. What the hell does this woman need an AK-47 for? The self-defense? She's going to go out and take down a whole rigging gang? Lauren Tannehill? I don't know if you watched the Hard Knocks, but she was one of the only reasons to watch Dumb as Rocks. So wasn't he, apparently. And she didn't know the reason to watch it, but she, you know, she's rolling strapped with an AK-47. Speaking of Hard Knocks, there are 8 teams. I don't know if you knew this. The NFL has now allowed themselves, Goodell has allowed himself to force teams to be on Hard Knocks, the HBO documentary of the preseason camp. There are 8 teams now because there's 3 criteria you could get away. You could get a grace. You get a pass. If you had a new coach, if you made the playoffs in one of the last 2 years, or if you already appeared in the Hard Knocks in the last couple of years. So it's 8 teams right now that are eligible. We got the Bears, the Bills, the Cardinals, the Giants, the Jags, the Raiders, the Rams, and the Steelers. Any of those teams, Eric Goodell could just go ahead and say, you're going to be, whether you like it or not, you're going to be on Hard Knocks this year. Well, it all depends on who the Raiders draft. I hope if the Raiders draft Johnny Manziel, put them on Hard Knocks. Can't go more than a half hour without talking about Johnny Football. Bears would be interesting as well. See how much of a douchebag Jay Cutler really is. Speaking of Vanderbilt, he's got that look about him. I don't know. We'll see. I'd like to be able to meet Jay Cutler a little bit more. Mark Trestman, he's got that, you know, pseudo-intellectual Joe Madden from the Tampa Bay Rays look, you know, with those big black glasses. Be another team I'd like to see. They can force one of those teams. Speaking of Ergadal, he seems like in the last day or two, he's been really pushing this, eliminating the extra points. But the proposal seems to be out there that's gaining some traction is each touchdown will be worth 7 instead of 6. And if you want to go for 2, you can go for 2. But if you miss, you go back to 6 or you get 8. And just saying, no, I'm good. We don't have to. We'll just take the 7. I don't like that myself as a quasi-purist. I think they should have to kick the extra point. I think you can move it back. But I don't think you just say, oh, no. You know, this isn't fucking golf on a Sunday afternoon with your homies and coworkers. Oh, no, that's good. It's a pickup. You know? Still a lot of execution to be. Although they make it look easy at the pro level, tell you what, snapping the ball back there, catching it, putting it down, and putting it up cleanly is, they make it look simple, but I know it's like a 99% success rate, but just move them back. Move them back. Make a kick a 35-yarder, kick a 40-yarder. They're saying, oh, the game, we can make the game so much longer. No, it doesn't make the game so much longer that they take a commercial after every kick or after every injury. They Fox plays that little piano injury music. Oh, we really hope this guy's all right. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Boy. What else do we got? Kellen Winslow. I'm surprised this story took so long to break because it happened back in November. Kellen Winslow Jr., soldier, bounced around, first-round pick, son of Kellen Winslow. Arrested last November for possession of synthetic marijuana and also public indecency. He was jerking off in his truck. And some lady came over to him for some reason, and he opened up the door, and he exposed himself. And he had not one but 2 canisters of Vaseline. I don't know what kind of unit freaking Kellen Winslow's playing with, and he 2 containers of Vaseline. You'd think he'd leave one, and if one was running low, you think he could be able to scrape the sides of the jar for enough to do the job. But he had 2 of them. The cops came. He was still partly naked, claiming he was just trying to get changed, and asked the cops where the Boston Market was. You know what the fuck? You gotta be a freaking deviant, do something like that, man. Tell you, I don't think Kellen Winslow would have a hard time getting laid. You know what I mean? A multimillionaire, big good looking guy. I don't think he's, you know, really hot up for women. He was just sitting in his truck, ringing, whacking himself off in a Walmart parking lot. And it didn't even get out until January, and it happened in November. Speaking of man, all he has to do, though, is go around, turn around, and claim CTE. Who knows how much that stuff is really causing people to act like wackos. Well, you know, we're putting the cop before the horse. I think they're just wackos in general. Speaking of wackos, Devon Bess, the wide receiver was it Cleveland? Devon Bess, yeah, it was Cleveland. He got caught. He freaking had a meltdown first of all year he was tweeting out and Instagramming out pictures of him smoking weed, pictures of him with all types of bud and shit, like pictures of Bob Marley and stuff, even though he knows he's going to be suspended for it. Evidently, he had a meltdown at an airport. But here's the kicker. Here's what I think is hilarious about the whole situation. Two things. One, last year he won Dolphins Man of the Year for his community work. Showed you what kind of dysfunctional system the Dolphins got. They got their own problems. Two, Bess was he wasn't arrested, but the cops came to his place last year because he was going nuts. He was going nuts inside his residence. He was doing all types of crazy shit, talking nonsense, and I guess they got there and it reeked of weed and all that. And he was talking nonsensical. And then like 2 weeks later, the Dolphins turned around and traded him to Cleveland. How does Cleveland, is Cleveland that dysfunctional of a franchise that they can't do the due diligence and work, you know, look up what's been happening to this guy, that he's unstable? It's just amazing how unthorough they can be at the pro level, the scouts. Just how they can look things like that. They went out and they traded for the guy, and then they went out and signed him like a $5 million guaranteed contract. And the guy had just arrested like 2 weeks before. Needless to say, I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back next year and plays. You know, it's a turnaround, man. What else we got? Vikings went out and hired Mike Zimmer as head coach and Norv Turner as offensive coordinator. About to enter the 10-6. Feel-good story of the year next year. I could see them being the feel-good story of the year around week 5 or 6, maybe starting out 5-1, and then just folding, being an also-ran. Good for Mike Zimmer, though. He's a career guy, career defensive coordinator. You know, getting a chance. At least he's not a retread, like Jim Caldwell being a retread. Well, Peyton speaks, you know, Jim Caldwell just got hired as the coach of the Lions. Peyton speaks real highly of Jim Caldwell, though. I don't know. I can say, and the Lions, again, their team is loaded. Talk about the most feared player in the league. They're the top two guys. It's the most feared players in the league. You know, I don't know. Rex Ryan came out this week saying that the only reason his brother's not getting an interview for a head coaching job is because of his hair. Not to mention the fact that his teams have been absolutely average on defense, every team that he has coordinated. He's only had one team make the playoffs in his last 4 stints as defensive coordinator, and that was this year's Saints team. Every other team he's been a D coordinator hasn't made the playoffs. But other than that, he deserves it. You know, his last name's Ryan. That stuff's inheritable. It's like the Vanderbilt job. I was paying attention to that. They interviewed Brian Schottenheimer. Guy has no experience in the college game, but his last name's Schottenheimer. Most respected player in the NFL, no surprise, 86% said, or 86 votes said Peyton Manning. Peyton. Tommy Brady and AP, 24 votes apiece. Also ran Calvin Johnson, Drew Brees, Lennon Fletcher, and Aaron Rodgers. This is the time of year where they love to put out those polls and ask these guys all these types of shit. Another poll, they had to start a team with one player. Again, Peyton, 62 votes. Andrew Luck, 56. Brady, 41. However, then they go and they ask 8 NFL personnel guys. Of course, I just articulated how much I think about them. 8 of them, who they take, Manning or Brady? 7 of the 8 would take Brady. Of course, 7 of the 8 would probably put weapons around them, but I digress. I've beaten that dead horse enough. Least liked QB in the NFL. There you go again, Tom Brady. Hate is going to hate. Tim Tebow, who's not, last I check, in the NFL, but still going to make waves. RG3 comes right there. Hate is going to hate. Eli right there. Cam Newton. Rodgers. Best of the best. One of Michael Vick's former lady friends came out with a book named Quarterback Keeper. A former stripper used to date Michael Vick. on and off from 2003 to 2011. The book could be worthwhile, but evidently some of the highlights of the books, Michael Vick used to have orgies at his house and used to go around with this girl from room to room and watch these orgies happen. Very Roman-like. Also, he would yell at her if she would pet his dogs because it was softening up the dogs. Mike Vick, free agent, hopefully coming to a team near you soon. Moving right along. Seattle becomes the eighth team or seventh team in NFL history to be the number one ranked scoring defense to end up in the Super Bowl. Seattle, Tampa, Green Bay, the Giants, with Lawrence Taylor, was 87. The Bears, San Fran, back in the day in Washington. I think the spread has gone out. They took it off the board today, last I checked. But I don't know why. Well, I'm sure there would be plenty come out. I'm just going to guess at this point. Shit, it's got to be a close spread. I want to guess Denver 3, minus 3. I don't think weather's going to be a factor. It'll be 30 degrees. It'll be fine. So, man. Seattle doesn't have their 12th man, even though they ripped that shit off. Stole it blatantly from Texas A&M. Evidently, they had to pay Texas A&M some money in 2006. Yeah, because A&M had it patented or something, and Seattle went ahead and stole it from them and ended up paying them money. So, classless fans, as it were, seeing Navarro Bowman, whom I picked for Defensive Player of the Year, tremendous player. It's a shame. Of course, they had that replay, which was non-reviewable for some reason. We stole the ball out there from Seattle. I don't know why they can't review it, and then now they say next year they're gonna. You think that's just a simple thing? Any potential turnover they should be able to review. Don't give me because of time reasons, time constraints. I don't believe that either. But when Navarro Bowman was being cut it off the field, someone threw some popcorn at him. Fuck it. Ugh. Screw the 12th man. Screw Macklemore. Screw that lime green. Screw Pete Carroll. Richard Sherman. But then I look on the other end and I just see Peyton. And if Peyton wins another one, I don't know. I guess, you know, there's always room for discussion, but shit, that would pretty damn close solidify him as the greatest of all time, but regardless, let's dive into the twit bag. We got a few questions we got to answer, and we can move on and celebrate the rest of the Martin Luther King Day. At Little Wayne Crebet, great name. Who do you think is more likely to resurrect their career next year? Mark Sanchez or Sam Bradford? Easy, Sam Bradford. Especially because the Rams got multiple picks because they fleeced Washington and RG3. Now they have the second pick overall. They can get a guy, Sammy Watkins, a receiver for Clemson. Already got Tavon Austin, Zach Stacy. You know, some stability. Fish has been there for a few years. Easy, I'll take Bradford. You know, Sanchez is going to be in a battle next year with Geno, I guess. Speaking of Geno, he got caught mouthing off at a airport this past week as well. Refused to take his earphones off. You know, this Beats generation. Richard Sherman had his Beats commercial the other day. This Beats generation, they're all glued to the headphones. He refused to take his headphones off on a flight. And a flight attendant tried to snatch his headphones off him. I think that's kind of ballsy. He's a big friggin' NFL player with his headset on, trying to snatch him off his head. She probably knew that there was a flight marshal sitting right there, ready to stun freaking Taze. Freaking Taze Geno Smith, take him out. The balls to do that. Who knows if Sanchez is going to... I don't think Geno Smith's a long-term answer, but who knows what the Jets end up doing. Could go out and get someone, go out and get a quarterback. I think there are guys out there, especially in this year. Well, even though this year's draft isn't what they thought it was going to be, there's a few players out there. Moving on. At Bro Mantegna. Who are the top defensive prospects to come out besides Clowney? Good question. Top of the line, you know, the ones that come on top of your head, Lewis Nix, D-tackle on Notre Dame. Anthony Barr, guy I'm back and forth on, but freakish athlete. The D-tackle from Florida State, Jernigan, although he taps himself out in the national championship game. I'll tell you another guy I really liked was Trent Murphy. Big white, 6'6", 280, fast white kid from Stanford. Big, strong DN. I think he could help all types of teams. Khalil Mack, I haven't seen him play, but they rave about this guy. Oh, for some reason, he ended up at Buffalo. But, you know, people slip through the cracks. Khalil Mack, I like, ha-ha, Clinton Dix. I'm a fan. Fan of Mosley as well, talking about Alabama, C.J. Mosley. I like the DB from Michigan State there, Dennett. He's a player. And the DB from Oklahoma State, Justin Gilbert. I like all those guys. So, you know, there are guys in the NFL, and who knows, there's countless others. It's amazing they show the Senior Bowl practices and shit. There's so many players out there, yet Patriots end up with Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, and Austin Colley. Those are the best athletes at the position. Speaking of Julian Edelman, I know I'm rambling off topic, but that's the whole fucking point of the show, isn't it? Julian Edelman, I don't know why they don't freaking run the reverse pass with Julian Edelman. They always fake the reverse to Julian Edelman, and I don't understand why they don't give it to him and have him pull up. The guy was a quarterback in college. And the double pass is an extremely effective tool, underutilized at the pro level, at all levels, really. Extremely tough, especially these defense that fly to the ball. But I digress. Amazing amount of scouts, quote-unquote, that are out there on Twitter. Guys who spend their whole freaking lives, and don't even get paid for it, breaking down players and then posting about them on Twitter. Twitter and DVR is really kind of cheapen the game day experience. I don't know how these people can watch games and tweet at the same times. My brain's too compartmentalized. So I don't know if that's the right word, but I can't do both. I got to be able to sit and watch the game and then, you know, maybe take it all in and talk about it. But I can't just get out there and tweet about it. And then what sucks if you recorded the game and you're a little bit behind in the game, you can't really go on the computer, or if somebody tries to text you, you know, you can't look at it because it'll friggin' ruin everything. So the best is no tweeting, watching it live like I did yesterday. And then pounding my friggin' 15 beers to drown out the sorrows of the Patriots once again. Last question out of the twit bag at Eric Ginty. Is it time for the Chargers to start thinking about moving on from Philip Rivers? Again, it depends who you can get. I think Rivers is a solid quarterback. I think he'll have you there. If there is, meaning your team's going to be average to slightly better than above average. Yes. But I tell you, I think these teams need to make these decisions. And they're risky. But you look at a team like Seattle and you look at a team like San Fran could do it. You get out and get a young quarterback and get them cheap, relatively cheap. Then that gives you more money to spread around elsewhere. You know, you don't get hamstrung with these deals on quarterbacks and then you can't pay anyone else. I mean, I see the Ravens just being mediocre. Thank you for the word, Richard Sherman, for a while because they've bought all their money tied up in Joe Flacco. Who's all right. But to answer your question, I'm thinking, you know, if they can keep Rivers relatively cheap, but if they can go out and get a quarterback and pay him $600,000 a year like San Fran's doing right now and Seattle's doing right now, you know, I think it's a smart play. I think it's a play that can get you immediate, I don't say recognition, but it can put you into the discussion rather quickly. You just got to hit on that quarterback. Easier said than done. You know, but if you can get away paying those guys relatively cheaply, go ahead. I think you could build a team otherwise. Look how stacked Seattle and San Fran both are on defense. You know, playmakers everywhere. And a lot of it's because of the savings from the quarterback position. So now we got two more full weeks of Richard Sherman being everywhere in his bow tie. Of talking about Peyton's legacy for the next 2 full weeks. Nightmare scenario. We got 2 states where marijuana is legal. So you got 2 states with the friggin' 2 biggest hippie fan bases. You got the Broncos and the Seahawks. I'm going to hold out on making any type of predictions till next week. even though I'm still the same person who picked the Falcons to go ahead and go to the Super Bowl. So I had Patriots and Falcons. So at least I was close on one of the two, but close doesn't get you nothing. Talk, let me end up a little bit of college football here and then I'll let you go. Just reading an article about how social media and Twitter has just destroying college recruits' lives. Kids, well, not destroying their lives, but they're just getting tweeted everywhere. People are saying, you know, come to our school. One guy said, he was an Ohio State fan, sent out a tweet to a kid, come to Ohio State or I'll kill myself. But then he came back and said, oh, no, no, I won't kill myself. I was just kidding. Shit. What a world we live in. Social media is just these poor bastards, these kids, and they get pumped up and then, you know, signing day is here around the corner. It'll be here, what, signing day is not this week? It's 2 weeks? It's like the first Wednesday in February. You know, these kids, and now we have, you know, their whole goal is to get the NFL. Like they had a couple, kids on that Under Armour game talking about how, you know, I'm going to spend the next 3 years at, you know, LSU, meaning, oh, I'm only going to go there to, so I could put my 3 years in and get out to the league. They had a record this year, 98 underclassmen declared. Last year was only 73, the year before that, 65, the year before that, 56. But again, you know, talk about what I was talking about earlier. It's amazing that the NFL can't put together some kind of developmental league. I really can, with all the money involved, it's just amazing to me they can't put together some kind of developmental league in the spring. Bring that shit out to, you know, places in the middle of nowhere. Who cares if they don't, not that many friggin' fans go to the games, although they should, especially if they have high, you know, high talent prospects being brought in. Why are you going to force them to go to college? Because the NCAA doesn't want it. That's why. NCAA is fighting it the whole, you know, tooth and nail. So 98 underclassmen. There's no way all those kids can get drafted. And what do they do after? What does the NFL do to take care of them after? Nothing. But, you know, they encourage it every step of the way, but then they don't do anything when those kids don't pan out. All right, that's it for me today. I'm going to save all my Super Bowl anecdotes for next week. We could talk about that. I'm going to have a guest next week. We'll talk about Super Bowl, and hopefully the following Sunday, I won't be in here because I got to watch that freaking game. Talk about that, and I'll come in the following Monday. So that's it. Follow us on Twitter. I finally got to 100 followers on Twitter, so fairly proud of that. Kirk Herbstreit went on a big Twitter rant the other day about how you know, you don't have a voice until you have 100 Twitter followers. So in your eye, Herbstreit. I know you're listening. In your eye. That's it. I'm the coach. I will see you next week.